Good morning. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order August 2nd, 2008. It's 9:26 or so, 27. We're running a little bit behind, but we're going to be trying to start at 9 a.m. in the mornings. With me today is Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Dyson, and Senator Thomas. Again, we're going to try to start at 9 a.m., but we've basically got two items in front of us between us and our summer vacation. We have this energy package bill, and we have an appropriation bill that'll come after this. So there's a lot of details we're trying to work out. And normally these bills, for those folks watching at home, are worked on over a period of 2 or 3 months or even longer. Sometimes they're worked on up to almost 2 years. In this special session, we have just a handful of days. So it's rather challenging. This morning, we're going to continue the discussion on Senate Bill 4002, the energy relief package. And we heard a little bit from the administration dealing with issues on version L. We've incorporated these changes into a new CS that we'll work on today. And we're going to have Ledge Finance walk us through the financial impact of the power cost equalization portion of the bill. You'll hear the acronym, for those of you who are at home, PCE, which is the power cost equalization. And it's one component of this bill. We'll answer some questions. We will not be taking amendments this morning. Again, just like to repeat that. We're not going to take amendments this morning. We will take public testimony, and then we're going to recess to the call of the chair as we try to work out some of these details of this bill to continue to move it forward. Hopefully, we'll be able to wrap this bill up this afternoon is the goal, if possible, and we'll take amendments later in the afternoon. But again, this is a work in progress dealing with the tight time frame that we've had to put a bill of this complexity together. Senator Hoffman, you have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 2004 Finance /T by Cook as our working document.
Okay. We have a motion to adopt version T as our working document. We have objection. Seeing no objection, we have version T in front of us. We have Director of Ledge Finance has enthusiastically joined the table. I think he's looking forward for a little summertime too, so he's not wasting any time getting here. And if you could introduce yourself for the record and then walk us through the model. And then I also have one of my staff members that will help us with the bill. Mr. Teal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance. You should have in front of you a six-page spreadsheet showing costs of the PCE program. It compares House and Senate. Of course, you don't have the House bill in front of you, and the House bill is subject to change anyway. So you probably want to focus on the Senate versions there. In column five.
Chairman, Senator, please. I'm trying to figure out which page we're on.
Page one.
There's a spreadsheet handout within your packet, colored.
It doesn't look like page one that I have.
It's just a corner of it. Upper right-hand corner.
Just to make it visible on the screen. I don't have the whole thing showing on the screen, but.
Okay. I got you.
I think when we walk through this, it's there's some moving parts, and we don't have the ability to get everything on the screen. So I think what we'll do is we'll kind of walk through it a little slow. I know sometimes when you work with a spreadsheet a lot, it's a little different than the first time you see it. So, and we have time, so we'll just kind of plug our way through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's absolutely true that that I'm more familiar with this spreadsheet than you guys are, and so please, if I'm moving too fast, if you have any questions, just interrupt. The current floor rate for PCE is 12.83 cents. That's computed by using the average of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau rates. And since this is only a two-year program, rather than trying to calculate those numbers, the bill simply sets the rate in statute at 10 cents. That's the floor rate. Then there's a subsidy of all costs above that, 100% of the costs that exceed the floor, up to the ceiling rate of $1.15. So the maximum subsidy that you can get is $1.05. In addition to that, there are some utilities that with rates below the 10 cents or near it, which wouldn't get money under the PCE program. So there's an alternative distribution there that you get a minimum of 5 cents, regardless of what the formula produces. These are some rate assumptions. It assumes that for existing rural utilities and 100% diesel powered, rates in 09 will be going up 50%. In urban areas where there's a combination of hydro and natural gas, other cheaper power, the assumed rate increase is 5%. You can then go to the program cost. This $64 million number is for those utilities that are currently on power cost equalization program.
Mr. Teal, if you could stop for a minute. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Mr. Teal, for letting me do the interruption. Before we move on, I'm somewhat on the upper part of the program. Before we leave that, we've got the per kilowatt hour payment to new utilities. What is a new utility?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, the newly qualified utilities are on page 6 of the handout. There are about a dozen of them. They're the ones that are currently ineligible because generally they're too large. There's a cutoff for eligibility in existing statute of 7,500 megawatt in production. Most of them are far larger than that. There's an additional eligibility clause which says you can't be a four dam pool utility.
Okay.
So the bill repeals both of those eligibility restrictions, making all utilities in the state eligible for PCE.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand, it's not utilities that are just coming online, it's new utilities that are being added to the program.
Through the chair, that's correct, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Teal, is it possible to, with your model, to collapse columns O, P, and Q? I mean, if it's not information we need.
So you can then go down the list if you're interested in any particular community. You can see that virtually all utility ratepayers are going to pay 10 cents. There are a few, two of them, with very high rates, $1.21, which exceeds the ceiling here, and therefore ratepayers would pay 16 cents even for the first 500 kilowatts. You can find any community you want on the chart, on the sheet here. But basically, it's 10 cents or lower for some of the newly qualified utilities. The urban rate, or the payment for newly qualified utilities, would average then about 8 cents per kilowatt hour for the first 500. And I also put on here the typical electric bill for 700 kilowatts of usage. The current program, the typical bill in a rural area would be for 700 kilowatts usage would be about $270. This drops it to $177, And for the newly qualified urban utilities, if you want to think of them that way, the bill would be $68. Now, in each case, the reduction for urban utilities will be about $25 per customer, because most of them will get the 5 cent reduction for 500 kilowatt hours, equates to $25. In the rural areas, it could be substantially more than that, because they'll be on affected more by the formula. If you look on page 6, the large differences are for Fairbanks, where their rates are high, and the 5 cent reduction, the rate's now current about 20 cents. They would, by formula, go down to 15 cents. By the 5 cent reduction would go to 15 cents, but under PCE, their rate would fall to 10 cents. So I think if you're interested in a particular community, you should be able to find it on the list, but the bottom line information is all at the top of the sheet, and this $21 million for community facilities is going along with current law, where community facilities get 70 kilowatt hours per capita in the community, and that's monthly. So that essentially this is a reduction in the community's electric bill to pay for community facilities.
And those items could include, what are they street lights and community centers, or what kind of items for the public would we expect to see as community items?
You're right, Mr. Chairman. That would be it could be the city hall or any community-owned run facility in rural areas. That might include a washateria. It does not include schools. Okay. And, of course, it does not include any commercial. This bill does not affect commercial rates.
Thank you. And that maybe Mr. Teal talk a little bit about how that $21 million would be dispersed to the communities.
Mr. Chairman, that would be, I assume, the same way that the money goes to the residents. The difference is that here the community would get an electric bill, get it reduced by the utility, and the check would go to the utility, but the community would get a bill saying, here's the reduction in your bill, much the same as the residential program works. But Sarah Fisher Goat is here and would be better able to answer that if I'm incorrect.
Okay, well, we'll bring her up later. We'll finish with your presentation and then walk through the bill, then we'll bring her up.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Teal? We'll have Mr. Peterson from my office come forward. We're going to go ahead and walk through the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Stedman. Is it your desire at this time, Mr. Chairman, that I just walk through the changes that we made to the emergency energy relief portion of the bill?
Yeah, why don't you do that? Walk through the changes, and then maybe before you start that, just give a brief synopsis of the bill for the folks that are home that are watching it that haven't watched the previous hearings on this bill.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. It's the energy package that is before you right now, version T, committee substitute version T, is a three-legged stool, pardon the expression. The first leg is the power cost equalization changes to the power cost equalization program. The second prong is the resource rebate program, which is a $250 rebate to to every Alaskan that qualifies for the 2008 permanent fund dividend. And then the third prong of the energy package is the emergency energy relief, which is a heating oil subsidy for Alaskans that heat their homes with heating oil. Okay. The Mr. Teal went through the changes to the power cost.
Senator Hoffman.
One other point that I think that since you're going over general remarks, the key factor in all of this is that these programs are for 2 years and 2 years only, so that Alaskans can have energy relief, know that they'll have energy relief for these 2 years, and it's the position that this will give the legislature next year adequate time to address long-term solutions. The proposals in this legislation are temporary in that they will be repealed automatically in 2 years, and that is to get us through get Alaskans through two seasons of high energy relief, and we would be looking at longer term solutions at that point. I think that's a critical critical statement.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might also add to Senator Hoffman's comments that the PCE and the Emergency Energy Relief are two-year programs, but the resource rebate is a one-time payout.
Right.
So for the benefit of your committee members, Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through the changes in the Emergency Energy Relief portion of the legislation.
Right.
Well, let me back up. There is one change that we did make to Section 7 of the bill on page 4, the resource rebate. And that's the amendment that was adopted yesterday, Senator Huggins' amendment number 5, that makes an exception for the 370 so veterans in Alaska that don't apply for the permanent fund dividend. They will be eligible for the resource rebate. Moving on to page 5, section 8, this is the emergency energy relief portion of the committee substitute. Lines 19 through 22 incorporates Senator Elton's amendment number 1 yesterday that allows for the reimbursement of sales tax paid on heating oil. Page 6, lines 3 through 8, this is new language, and this language in essence requires that a landlord or lessor pass on the savings from the resource rebate program to the renters on a pro rata basis. Failure to do so is a violation of AS 4550-471, which is the Unlawful Trade Acts and Practices statute. Moving down page 6 to line 25, we deleted the requirement that a business or entity that sells fuel oil be a qualified distributor. Purpose for that change, it does broaden it a little bit, but the purpose of that change is we found out through working with Senator Hoffman's office that there are areas in rural Alaska, such as Crowley Marine, for example, that is a qualified distributor, but they sell their fuel to a lot of the village co-ops that aren't qualified distributors. So we're not broadening the program as far as the individuals that we're gonna assist with this program, but we are clarifying that that those entities will be eligible. Page 6, lines 27 through page 7, line 3. This is anti-gouging language that will, in essence, prevent distributors from artificially inflating their prices solely in response to this new program. And then the last change, Mr. Chairman, is really just a technical change on page 9. Lines 2 through 4. This is the criminal subsection. It's a Class A misdemeanor for someone to use fuel that has been reimbursed through this program for purposes other than a primary residence, or it's also a Class A misdemeanor to use fuel that's reimbursed through this program for a building that's owned by a government entity. That concludes my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
I assume that we're also implying that it's inappropriate to use fuel that was subsidized under this program for powering a boat engine. And do we need to make that explicit?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson.
Or a pickup?
No, in discussion with our legislative legal counsel, the language is pretty explicit in here that the fuel has to be used for a primary residence. It cannot be used for a business, for a government-owned building, or for motor fuel.
I think if I could just clarify that, was the question liveaboards available to access 600 gallons of fuel for their boat? Is that the point?
It wasn't, but it should have been. Good catch.
We can double check that, because clearly that is not the intent of the bill. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the number was substantially higher, I think that could be an abuse, but I think that the people are going to be using easily 600 gallons to heat their home. So I think that the possibility of abuse is very, very slim.
There's another question. Was Senator Elton? Who's a
I was going to ask the liveaboard question, Mr. Chair, so okay. Ask and answer. Okay.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I get my question is, where is the language that describes a senior housing? Where is that described in here? Because I'm going to be asked that question immediately by some seniors. I need to be able to articulate that to them.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, Senator Huggins, there is no language in there specifically that carves out that group of buildings. If it's owned by AHFC, then it would not be eligible. And the thought process behind that is AHFC has access to the legislature during the regular legislative session in their supplemental request. If they needed additional funds for heating oil for their buildings.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I might think about that one for a moment, because in my neck of the woods, we have some senior housing complexes that they're in real trouble based on heating oil and things in the winter. So I may be coming forward with some consideration on that.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peterson, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. Is it true that because of previous programs that are put in place, that none of the North Slope villages are eligible for this resource rebate?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it's my understanding that the North Slope Borough subsidizes the heating oil for its residents, and that the price of heating oil to the residents is the price that they pay for transportation, which is roughly about $1.50 a gallon. So this legislation would bring the price of heating oil up to 600 gallons per year down to $3 per gallon for all Alaskans that heat with heating oil. So yes, you're correct. The residents of the North Slope Borough would not be eligible, because the price that they pay for heating oil is substantially less than that already.
I just find that a little troubling, Mr. Chairman, just to voice my opinion, since I'm the senator, and the resources for the state come from that area. But we'll.
Could you speak a little louder into the mic so we can pick it up?
I find that lack of providing for where the North Slope villages are impacted somewhat troubling, especially since the resources for the state's revenues in excess of 80% are coming from that area. So I think we have to do some work on that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Probably over 90% now in valuation to the Treasury out of the North Slope, I would think.
And the coldest temperatures are recorded in the North Slope.
Do we have other questions, concerns? Bill, do we have Sarah Fisher Gold? Would she like to come forward and
have one more question for Mr. Peterson, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Speaking of power cost equalization, and I realize that I probably should have asked this question earlier on, but in this backslash T segment of 4002, what's the change in effect, if any, on the North Slope villages that do or do not participate in power cost equalization?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I'd have to defer that question to Mr. Teal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You've been abandoned.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Sarah Fisher Goh, Deputy Director of Operations for the Alaska Energy Authority. I think I may be able to answer Senator Olson's question on the North Slope Borough utilities. My understanding, the North Slope Borough villages, they do have a subsidized rate of approximately 15 cents per kilowatt hour. So I believe under the Senate version of the bill, they would be eligible for the minimum nickel subsidy. So I believe their rates would go to 10 cents a kilowatt hour.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Teal, is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it's probably true, but I didn't hear the answer. And I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry. But I'm sure Sarah is right.
So we have questions for Senator Golder. Would you like to make any comments, walk through the bill? Tell us how much you like it, and tell us how good it is.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I appreciate very much the hard work that your staff has done to address some of the issues and concerns that were brought to them from me and other administrative folks regarding the bill. I think there was a question earlier with respect to community facilities. AEA would make a determination of eligible community facilities based upon the definition in statute. Right now, we've been working, obviously, with the PCE eligible communities, primarily smaller unincorporated communities. We'll have to take a look at that where there's obviously larger community facilities that would be eligible. That is all doable within the confines of the program that we administer right now. The community facilities, they would not be able, if they're owned by federal or state government in those communities, they would not be eligible. But other community facilities meeting the statutory definition and would be eligible. And you're correct, Washateria's, I believe city-owned government buildings would be eligible for the calculation. And right now that calculation is 70 cents a kilowatt hour based multiplied by the population of the community per month. And so the community facilities in the community would share that collective eligible kilowatt hours.
Okay. We have any other questions for her? Okay, well, thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Sarah, as I look at senior housing, I've heard different accounts about where they fall in categories that they're not owned by HFC, that HFC does grants and things of that nature. So my question for you, are senior housing programs in the program or out of the program?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, my understanding, how I interpret the bill, is that senior housing that is not owned by a governmental entity, if it's owned by a nonprofit, would be eligible as an entity. And I believe the Section 6 that discusses on the landlord or lessor who, if they apply for a payment for
that's
the
on,
fuel.
That's on page 6, line 3.
Correct. That was new language that was put in the CS, that the person who is eligible and applies for that fuel payment for if it's a multifamily building, which I believe most senior housing probably is, that they would then have to pass on those savings to their the tenants. So they're in a broader sense, if it's not governmental owned, if it is senior housing and and owned by a nonprofit, I believe it would be eligible under that section, and that would have to be passed on to the tenants.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you. You qualified your statement of "I believe." I just want to make sure that you're confident that it. I mean, the answer is either yes or no. And I'm not trying to be curt with you, but I need to know definitively. Number one, number two. Let's just, for sense of conversation, say that there are 10 seniors that live in this housing. Is it 10 different people being eligible for 500 gallons, or is a complex eligible for 500 gallons?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the way I have interpreted this and read this, that each unit in a multifamily building would be eligible up to 300 gallons of fuel. So, and if staff interprets it differently than how I'm reading this, I would expect that this is how we would implement this. That if someone owns a tenplex and it's not owned by a governmental entity, they could apply for that tenplex for up to 300 gallons multiplied by 10 for those units, and then pass that payment to lower the rent of the tenants based upon the Section 6. So, and that's not specific to senior, but it's specific to multifamily housing.
Yeah, help me, I'm a little bit slow. Where's the 300 gallon number?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that would be Section 8. My read of that is it's a very long paragraph, but about line 25.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me page and line number, please.
Page 5, line 25.
Starts on about line 22 and runs down for a couple of
minutes. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I really appreciate the line of questioning from Senator Huggins here. And I assume that the same principle would apply to a nonprofit, like in my district where we have a group housing for a troubled youth. There's another house that's owned by a nonprofit that's for rehabilitation of hookers getting out of prison, and there's several large subsidized housing for people on the edge of homelessness, and if my assumption is incorrect, please get back to me. But I'd also like it to be clear here on the record, as a result of Senator Huggins' question, is that these assumptions that have been explained to us are intrinsic in the bill, and I suspect Senator Huggins and I's votes on this will be based on those assumptions. Thank you.
We're going to clarify some of that here.
Through the chair, Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Stedman again. To answer Senator Dyson and Senator Huggins' question, originally the legislation said that in order to qualify you had to be an individual. Now the legislation says that to qualify you have to be a person. And the definition of a person is a corporation, company, partnership, firm, association, organization, business trust, or society, as well as a natural person. So a nonprofit organization would qualify, but a purely government-owned building would not.
Okay, we have other questions? Do we have anybody from the administration wants to come forward and speak their piece? Clarify anything? And I assume they're fully supportive. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess for Ms. Goode, from the administration. What's the administration's position on this bill? Or any broad shoulder?
Anybody from the administration wants to come forward and speak? Yeah. even if you don't want to come forward and speak, we invite you in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Randy Ruaro.
Could you
special
pull
assistant.
The mic up, Randy, please?
I'm a special assistant for the governor, and I can't say what the administration's position is on the bill yet. I haven't been advised of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think it's important that we work together, and this is just another opportunity to do that, to bring things along. And to the extent that there are things that have weaknesses or are troubling to the administration, I think it's, as we're working through this, it's better to address those sooner than later so that we can hopefully come to some middle ground that we can all shake hands on.
To the chairman, I can say that the Department of Law and myself and several agency folks have been working closely with the Finance Committee staff to try to make improvements where requested.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And we'll, as mentioned earlier, be setting this bill aside as we, not setting aside, but we're going to recess here in a little bit to the call of the chair, and we're getting close to releasing this bill from committee, so if there's any input from the administration, it's appreciated before it leaves the table versus on the governor's desk. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Page 4, I'm sure the administration still has some concerns about the resource rebate being only $250, and I know that this is an area that gives me some concern, and I think that there needs to be additional dialogue at this table regarding what would be the preference of the committee and what would be acceptable to the legislature and what the expectations are of Alaskans on this item.
Okay. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One final question for myself on behalf of constituents. What do we see the round number of dollars it takes for the fiscal note on this?
We are working on the fiscal note.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. If it's not, we don't have it yet. That's good.
Just we'll take a brief at ease. go ahead and call the committee back to order. Just to address, I think it was Senator Huggins' question on the fiscal notes. The deer in the headlight looks from the chairman as I was waiting for the last fiscal note to come. And it's just been passed out. So that it's the one date or timed 9:30 a.m. this morning. So anyway, that should be the updated fiscal note. And I had the staff try to look through the packets and grab the old fiscal note as they went around the table and gave the members the new one. So again, it's the one dated 8/2/08 at 9:30 a.m. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But it should be noted that the $140 million is directly related to the power cost equalization program. And I think the number for the
I've got them here. The home heating is 173, but
And the PFD is?
Yeah.
One
dividend will cost about $155 million plus the additional $500,000 for administration hold harmless. We're roughly at about 468, somewhere in there.
Which is a good start.
Which is, yeah, we're...
Mr.
Chairman.
So, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. So we're under 500 base. Is that, I mean, someplace under 500? Starting to bump up again. Is that...
Correct. And, yeah, we're going to have Mr. Baker walk through it. But, yeah, as round numbers, we can just think slightly under 500. That's close enough for conversations as this thing is in flux almost hourly. But Mr. Baker, if you could kind of walk us through the fiscal notes, please.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Miles Baker, staff to Senator Stedman. I apologize, the fiscal notes have been a little confusing because we had a batch that came in with the administration's original bill. And then as we've moved these different components into this bill, the Finance Committee has updated the fiscal notes just internally so that we could try to keep a handle on what these various programs were costing. So there's really three, I would direct you to three fiscal notes. The most recent one is one for power cost equalization changes. And it's dated today, 9:30 in the morning, and it's the PCE fund is the department affected. And on all these notes, the appropriation required column is blank because we'll be funding these programs through an appropriation bill. So these are really for purposes of information. So that's why it's in the second column, the FY09 column. So the changes as proposed in the bill you discussed this morning would cost, we'd have to appropriate an additional $140.8 million into the PCE fund. There's already $28 million in that fund. So the total program cost is $168.8 million. And you see that reflected in the 2010 column because that's what it'll actually cost to run it for the whole year. But since we've already got 28 for this year, the appropriation for 09 is less. And then you'll notice then in 2011, it drops back to what the current program costs are, which is the 32.6. And then in the fund source column, it just shows you that the projection is that we would be able to pull roughly, and these are AEA's projections, and if anything I say sounds wrong, Sarah can try to come up and correct me because I know she's working on her own version of this, checking it with their numbers. But the expectation is that we can pull out $24.8 million a year from the fund. Currently, the way we've structured the endowment, and the rest would have to be paid out of the general fund. The other two fiscal notes, there is one which is for the Department of Revenue, And it's written to version L, and it says resource rebate program, and it's dated 7/31. It's 2:45 p.m., and that's for $155.1 million. And that's the cost of the $250 additional payment added to the permanent fund dividend. And that's based on 622,000 eligible Alaskans receiving the $250. And then it's estimated there's will be $100,000 additional required from the PFD division to manage that program. The last one is the fiscal note for the home fuel assistance, and it's written to version L. It says Alaska Energy Authority is the RDU. It's dated 7/31 at 2 p.m. That's for $172,889,000. Again, that's for 2 years. And that is the estimated cost of providing the fuel rebate that we've discussed. And the analysis for that number is on the second page. Okay. And so those are basically the three fiscal notes we're working with. And I think the sum is just shy of $500 million.
Okay, thank you. And just like the record to reflect that Senator Stevens has been here diligently through the whole morning, and Senator Davis has been here also. Senator Elton.
Just a clarification. I mean, we are close to $470 million $500 million this year, but it's probably important to note that there is an obligation in FY10, which is about another $400 or $450 million too. Is that correct?
That's correct. The $155 million wouldn't be there for the dividend, but the PCE costs go up by about $30 million. So it's about just off the top of my head, another $400 million.
So I think, Mr. Chair, if it could. So I think what I guess I'm trying to get to is the total cost of the bill that we have in front of us is not that far off from what the total cost of the governor's programs had been.
But the governor's program was a one-year program.
It was a one-year program.
And our program is 2 years.
That's right.
Governor's program being a one-year cash payment. And we're trying to get more direct assistance right to the problem, which is home heating for this winter and next winter. Any other questions on the fiscal notes? And again, they're in flux as we work through this process too, and we'll try to keep them updated. Do we have any call-ins, off-nets, or onlines, or in the public? Or they're just there for questions. So we have no public call-in. We have anybody that wants to come forward from the audience and speak on the subject matter? Seeing none, we're going to stand in recess to the call of the chair. It'll probably be this afternoon sometime. We'll try to keep postings fairly current so people can deal with their schedule, but we have to work on this bill internally some more. And we're going to try to bring it back today, and hopefully we'll take action. I'd like the committee to consider the point that Senator Hoffman brought up on the dividend. Some would like zero, some would like unlimited. Right now it's $250 in the bill. If you have another number, let us know. That's one of the other issues internally in here. And with that, we'll see everybody back here sometime this afternoon. And please, the senators, if they could stay close to the building, as we want to wrap up this special session sooner than later. They're at ease. go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee back to order on Senate Bill 4002, the Energy Relief Package. We have a series of amendments. First Amendment, Amendment Number 6, by Senator Olson. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 6.
I'll object.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment Number 6, essentially, what it does is it changes and inserts the words "and municipalities" after the word "persons" in a number of places throughout the bill 4002. And what it essentially, what has happened so far is that because of the forward thinking of the North Slope Borough, when the price of heating oil had gone up so high, was the North Slope Borough instituted a program that would help its residents that are up there, those households with home heating oil, of which there are the communities outside of Barrow, Atkinsuk, Anaktuvik, Kaktuvik, Point Hope, Point Lay, Nuiqsut, and Wainwright, which are all heating on stove oil. Barrow itself is under natural gas, but because of the size of these communities, they are still dependent on heating oil. And because of the inability for people to go ahead and maintain residence out there with heating oil so high, the North Slope Borough a number of years ago instituted a program, much like we're trying to do now, to make it so that people can continue to live out there. And because of this forward thinking, they, as the state now is into a program of trying to make it so that heating is some more equitable throughout the state, they want to, we want to go ahead and participate in that program and don't want to be penalized because of the subsidy that was there before and the forward thinking that has happened. Obviously, the price of oil over the last number of years that's been purchased by the borough has gone up from, in fiscal year 2002, went from $7.3 million and is now up last year to $21.8 million, while the consumption over that period of time has gone down by 700,000 gallons. And so I think that in light of what's going on here, in order for my people to not feel like the redheaded stepchild in a number of programs, I'm putting this amendment in there so that they can take advantage of some of the money that's coming into the state coffers and put the North Slope Borough revenues that are coming into other programs that they have that are slowly diminishing because of the shrinking budget that they have. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I ask for support for this amendment.
Thank you. We have
Can I just
go ahead.
Continue on for just a second. We got, just to let people know, we have 670 households out in on the North Slope Borough, and the average amount of gallon rebate is going to be $2.51. Works out to just over $1 million. And when you have a fiscal plan that for this bill that's $173 million, $1 million to include the people on the North Slope where the 92% of the Alaska's resources come, I think is only the most considerate thing to do.
Senator Elton.
Just a real quick question, Mr. Chair, of the amendment sponsor. So there are three ways of dealing with this. One is the current version of the bill where the municipality is left out. Second would be adopting this amendment. The third way, it seems to me, would be for the North Slope Borough not to do a subsidization program, and then the households would all get the same subsidy that is envisioned in this bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Senator Olson.
That certainly is one. Those three are the theoretical ways to go ahead and handle it. I think to dismantle a program that's been in place for a long period, or for a period of time, would, and to do that for a program that's going to be only around for a year or two is probably not the most efficient way to do that. So I think that the most considerate way to do that, as I put it, is to adopt the amendment.
Thanks, Senator Olson. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
We have any other questions on the amendment? I maintain my objection. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Jackson?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
No.
Senator Hobbs?
Yes.
Senator Thomas?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman? Not at two. Senator Stetler?
No. We'll move on to the next amendment. And he's not here, so we'll move on to amendment number 9. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 9 simply adds alternative fuel and power projects to existing statute. The intention is that it would require these projects to go through the same process as already the renewable projects do. As it is now, one could conceivably say that these projects circumvent the process. Since we're trying to create one process for all projects, it was seemed reasonable to me to not only add alternatives but put them into the same program that already exists, so they get the same process, that they go through the same vetting. Not all areas of the state are obviously going to have access to the same types of power generation and or energy resources, so some will continue to rely on similar processes that are in place now, and it seems to me that it just makes sense to bring these projects technology-wise up to more efficient, more environmentally friendly, and less expensive processes to help deal with the energy problem that exists throughout the state. So just looking quickly at the bill, it's a very small amendment, as you can see in on page 1, lines 10 and 11 simply add the words to the list of things that are already considered in statute, and it lists alternative energy projects, simply putting that word in.
I maintain my objection. Is there any other comments? Senator Dyson, and then did you have your hand up, Senator Olson?
Yes, please.
And then Senator Olson.
I think we've had some discussion at this table, but maybe the Senator Thomas could refresh my memory on what is included or excluded under alternative energy projects. I'm thinking particularly of fish waste, lumber waste. Senator Olson's area has enough coal for all of North America for 500 years if we can do it in a clean clean way. So can you help me, sir?
Certainly. Go ahead, Senator Thomas.
For this project, or for this bill, what it is an alternative energy project. Rather than just read it to you, I'll point it out to you first, and then you can read it for yourself. On line 20 of page 1, it describes what an alternative energy project must be to qualify for a grant recommendation. It says, new project not in operation or the effective date of this bill section, or in addition to an existing project made after the effective date of this bill. Facility that generates energy or fuel that is less expensive, more efficient, or has a less adverse effect on the environment than the energy or fuel that was previously used by a community. So it could be just about anybody's concept of what might come up, and all of those that you mentioned are obviously considered alternatives at this point. So we expect to rely on what already is considered alternatives in the Alaska Energy Authority's definition.
Thank you. That's a very satisfactory answer.
It also does, just one last thing that it does do, it does not change that the $50 million in capital funds have been appropriated for the renewable energy project stays in that. It does not appropriate any money for this. It only looks forward to future money.
Senator Elton.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I may have misunderstood, but if I remember the debate from last year when we were talking about renewable energy, in that debate we were pretty careful on clarifying what renewable energy covered. And it did cover biomass, it did cover wood chips, it did cover fish waste. So all of that is included. I mean, the way I understand this is the major effect of this is that it adds coal. And so I think that is what this amendment does. And Mr. Chairman, as long as I have the microphone, I'm not necessarily opposed to this, but I'm kind of opposed to voting on it now. I would just note that we are expecting by the end of this year an energy plan that will hopefully provide a very comprehensive recipe of where we need to go from here. And I guess I think it's probably better to wait until we've got that than it is to try and kind of take one small step forward. So with that, I guess I'm just more than strongly suggesting I'm going to vote against this amendment now.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Thomas, as we look at this amendment, I heard you say that there was the effect of the fiscal note, or there would be no fiscal response, or there would be no fiscal liability related to this. With this, is that what you're saying?
That's correct. This does not appropriate or add any money. It just simply puts the language into the bill to allow the consideration of those projects, which in fact some are included, some that people think are included are not, if you look at the wording of the existing bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Or the existing statute.
Any other questions on the amendment? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just sort of echo what Senator Elton said in the respect that I've tried to be consistent in what we're doing here to, quote, get us through the winter, and then let's look at programs that get us through future years. And I think it needs to be comprehensive. And I've tried to limit my appetite to, you know, things that are on a menu someplace, because I think we need to make sure we have a programmatic examination from top to bottom, left to right. And so I would just encourage us to take a little more long-term view.
I happen to have the same view that this language change should be left for a later date when we work on the comprehensive long-range energy plan of the state coming in the next session. We have any other Senator Thomas closing comments on it?
Yeah, just one last comment. As I said, this is just an addition to the language. It does not actually change the process that can already take place, other than it puts it in existing language and requires that this type of project be run through the same course of events that already exists for others. So be that as it may, it does not do anything that cannot already be done, except what can be done now is outside of our normal process, our latest statute. So that is the concern, is that if you're going to have these projects come forward anyhow, that they be done through the existing statute.
Chair maintains his objection. Is there any further comments? Call the roll, please.
Senator
Elton?
No.
Senator
Huggins?
No. Senator
Olson? Yes.
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
No.
Senator
Hoffman? No. Let's go to amendment number 7 by Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 7, and I think someone from the administration is here to
speak to it. We have somebody from the administration. I know we're running parallel issues going on. If we'll just take a brief at ease.
Jay or David.
Ms. Ryder, could you come forward, please? That means you.
Okay.
If you could, if we could have some.
We have a copy of the amendment.
We're back on the record, by the way. If we could have you introduce yourself and who you represent, and then walk through the amendment, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman. I'm Amanda Ryder, the Director of Commerce Community, Director of Administrative Services with Commerce Community and Economic Development. This amendment looks like it increases the cap for the bulk fuel bridge loan fund to $750,000 and from $500,000. And the estimates that we've received, the impact of this amendment will add about $2.5 million to the need of the program. At this point, you have an amendment before you that adds about $2 million for to be able to meet the needs of a cap of $500,000. And this is expected to increase that by about $2.5 million plus some in administrative costs.
Okay. And I, hold on a second here. I have a brief at ease. Record, we're just for formality here. I'll object to the motion for discussion and then continue your explanation and we'll have a conversation on the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Amanda again. Sarah Fisher-Gode has joined me in case you have any questions on the bulk fuel loan fund. So the first portion, as we were talking about, was the bridge loan fund, and those are 0% interest loans at this point. There's about 16 loans that are outstanding. They expect, they've received inquiries for another six loans for that, and then they also have additional numbers of communities that they expect. So does anybody have any questions on the bridge loan amendment?
Questions? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'm...
If you could pull your mic up, please. And
yeah, I'm confused. So we're looking at an amendment to the T version. So the last T version I've got, the section 1C is about power cost equalization. What am I missing here?
This amendment changes statute. These are two, this amendment basically amends two existing programs that are in statute. One is the Bulk Fuel Bridge Loan Fund. It does not actually amend it adds a new bill section to the T version.
Ah, okay, and I should have seen that in that it's addressing a different section of the code. So then I assume that, but later on here it goes back and adds in the, I see, wait a minute, and this amendment adds back in the, or renumbers something here so that the power cost equalization is still in the bill?
Yes, this,
not substituting.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, this amendment doesn't have anything to do with the power cost equalization program. This amendment amends two existing loan funds that are presently in statute. It just increases the cap for both of these loan programs from $500,000 to $750,000.
All right, I got it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ryder, the reason for this amendment is it not that the price of fuel is escalated and we're having trouble with the ceiling?
That is correct, through the chair. They are expecting more and more communities to need loans because of the rising price of fuel. And the bridge loan program is a lender of last resort. And funding for that particular program can only be received if the communities have been denied by AEA for the bulk fuel loan fund. There are two. They're closely named. Bulk Fuel Bridge Loan Fund, which is a lender of last resort, and the Bulk Fuel Revolving Loan Fund, which is AEA also.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions, Senator Huggins and Senator Olson?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The since this is the last resort, I guess my question is how often is it exercised, and then what's the delinquency history or the payback, and said in a more positive way?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, this actually has been a program that's worked very, very well. At present, there are 16 loans that 16 communities that have taken advantage of this, and my understanding is that there is no delinquency on these loans. The Rural Alaska Fuel Services is an independent contractor that's been handling these. They work very closely with the communities to for in a variety of ways to ensure that these communities can help pay it back. They are 0% interest loans, and then the communities cannot borrow any more funding if the loans are not paid back. So there's a strong incentive to pay these loans back.
Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, this makes sense to me. My question for you, are you supporting this as an agency member?
I have asked Community and Regional Affairs Director, you know, what they feel, because I know Rural Alaska Fuel Services feels that this is very necessary, and the Director of Community and Regional Affairs certainly supports raising the ceiling as well as, but primarily supports getting additional funds, because that's desperately needed at this point.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions on the amendment for the... Senator Olson, you were queued up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure that I'm clear in what was reported. Is that the 16 outstanding fund loans that were there were under the bulk fuel bridge loan fund?
There have been 16 communities that have taken advantage of this and have borrowed money from this fund.
And you say there's no delinquency there?
That is my understanding through the chair to
thank
Senator
you, Mr.
Olson.
Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the amendment. Any further objections to the amendment? Number seven.
Yeah, it's a good program.
Yep. Seeing no further objections to amendment number seven, amendment number seven is adopted. Thank you. We'll take up amendment number eight, and I'll ask trustee staff to come forward. And I'll go ahead and move amendment number eight, and I'll object for discussion. Amendment number eight deals with landlord-tenant and the fuel adjustment and how cost price adjustment and how that would be dealt with. We're having some language challenges. And I'll let Mr. Baker walk us through that scenario, and we'll get the mood of the committee on this issue, because we haven't had much of a chance to discuss this. So.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Miles Baker, staff to Senator Stedman. And this amendment is brought forward to try to rectify some concern that's been raised. When this program was devised and we decided we were going to assist homeowners with heating their homes, the issue of apartment complexes and multi-unit dwellings came up, recognizing that although not all of those, many of those are run as businesses, so we're not providing heating assistance for commercial properties, but we wanted to put something in the bill that would put a mechanism in place to assist renters. And so the draft of the bill you have in front of you on page 6, subsection C, on line 3, was the section of the bill to do that. But the way it's written now would basically require a landlord to, if they choose to apply for the rebate, they would have to pass on all of the rebate to the renters. And the issues that's been raised is that the renter, they're not paying all the cost to heat that facility that fits, and it depends on, you know, some apartments are done differently, some of them have common property in the building, there's a lot of different structures. So, but at the same time, we didn't want to allow the landlords to just take the payment and not pass anything on, but some landlords haven't increased their rent and they've just reduced their margins due to high energy costs. So how can we craft something that would put something in place for renters? So that's what this amendment tries to do. And what we've said is that if a landlord, the other thing we noticed was that in the draft, it only talks about multiple units and didn't contemplate just somebody renting a house to someone else. So we took the multiple unit language out and made it generic to any landlord. So it now says a landlord or leaser that receives a payment under this section, so they've decided to apply for the rebate, they must pass on a benefit to the tenants by lowering the amount of rent by the amount attributable to that tenant's unit. So the amount of the benefit that can be attributed to that unit must be passed on, and that how that's attributed and is going to have to be something that passes the muster of the regulations set up through AEA, because when a landlord takes advantage of the rebate, they will have to be willing to have their books audited, and they will have to justify whatever formula they put into place to attribute those benefits back to the renters. And to not do so in a way that's, I guess, justifiable would be a violation of the Fair Trade and Practices Act. And it says they can, I'm sorry, and the second piece of that was that they can, of the benefit, take 10% of it to pay for the administrative costs of figuring this out.
Thank you. Senator Dyson, you had a question.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys thinking about this. I can see how very difficult it is. And many renters have a lease, you know, that probably precludes the landlord from having raised cost. And I'm thinking about the landlord who's been eating the fuel bill increase and is just waiting for the moment when the lease is up, you know, so that he can raise it, and all of a sudden we come in with our program here and say, oops, you can't do that, you know, and he can't recoup the loss he's been eating, and the timing of all of that will be fair to some folks and unfair to others, and I don't have a solution for it. My guess is that it's a good idea that we probably shouldn't do it this time, but what do we do about all those timing situations?
Well, through the chair, Senator Dyson, I mean, some of the early drafts of this, we were trying to, we had some language that said, you will lower the benefit, the portion of any rent increases proportionally to the benefit you get back from the state. And then that exact question came up, well, what if they haven't raised the rent yet? Or what if they have raised the rent, but they've never specifically delineated to the tenant that this portion of that raise is due to high rent costs, that they didn't have any way to substantiate that's why they raised the rent. So this was what we've been able to come up with, and in the hopes that by adding in here the violation and requiring that should they choose to do this and set a system up to make these payments, they'll have to be willing to be audited by AEA and justify how they're doing it.
Thank you.
It's a tough, we went around and around on this language, so I'm open for suggestions. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the first thing is, as I read this out of context, it appears that the tenant could, in fact, be a commercial tenant. But I may be wrong on that. Help me if it doesn't preclude it. And I'm not looking at the bill. I'm just looking at the amendment. But we can flush through that. My particular question has to do with the 10%. What is the range of how much 10% would be in dollars and cents? And I know that may be a hard question to answer, but somebody will ask that, and I hope one of these days it doesn't show up in print that it's a huge number or a number larger than we'd like to feel comfortable about, or people are losing money. I mean, that it works, I suppose.
Well, through the chair, Senator Huggins, it would be, I mean, I guess the rough calculation, it's going to be 10%. I mean, the way I've interpreted this is the landlord would, he fills up his tank for the 10-unit building, applies for the rebate, gets the money back, and that he apportions a portion of that, he's going to possibly apportion to some common areas, perhaps,
right.
And then the balance that's left, 10% of that, that's the amount that's going back to the tenants. 10% of that he could take off for the administrative costs of now having to do this, because it was also suggested that they probably wouldn't want to lower the rent because then the rent amount would be lowered differently depending on when these checks and reimbursements were coming in, that the rent would stay the same, but he would just turn around and give a check back to the tenant. But I get, I mean, the 10% is probably going to be 10% on an average of $1.50 to $1.75 rebate. We're assuming the statewide average is $5.70. The state's picking up everything over $3, so 10% of $2.70 times the number of gallons would be the maximum amount they could take.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So I know it's a varying amount depending on the fluctuating price. So if fuel's $8 or $10 versus $4, it's a tough one. Senator Elton.
Can I, I think you're taking me out of cue, and I appreciate that because
no, I think you're next.
Oh, okay. But the other factor is the number of units. I mean, so if you have a 5-unit complex, you're getting half as much as a 10-unit complex would get, assuming the other factors were the same.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, the 5-unit complex is eligible for 5 times 300 gallons, so it's 1,500 gallons during the 7-month window.
Which means the administrative fee is going to be half that owner of a 5-unit or the landlord of a 5-unit complex is going to be getting half the cash for administrative costs than the owner of a 10-unit complex.
Correct. Yeah. Senator Thomas?
Right, it's not indexed. The percentage isn't indexed in any way to how many units they have.
Right. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. could a landlord say that, well, I haven't increased the rent for a certain period of time, so I'm not giving anybody anything? Or is it literally that they have to prorate in some fashion on a 12-plex the amount of energy that is consumed or fuel that is consumed in some reasonable manner to each of the units and pay something back to them, even though they may not have raised their rent? I find that hard to believe in this day and age, but it could be like the situation where the lease that exists. But I'm assuming that if a lease exists, I don't know if this overrides a lease, and if in fact it doesn't, we're left with only handshake agreements, but somebody can establish that the rent has been the same for 2 years or something. So been little impact or none on the tenant because the rent's always been the same. Could the landlord then say, I'm not giving them anything because I have sucked up all of the change or the fuel cost increases?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the way I am interpreting this, they would have to pass something on because it says that if they're going to apply for this program, take a rebate, they must pass on a benefit and even if they haven't raised the rent, I think they're going to have to have a formula for attributing how much of their fuel oil purchases are being used to heat these units. And I think it would be hard to, you could certainly say, well, I haven't raised my rent, but you couldn't say that a portion of this fuel oil is not being used to heat those units and I'm being rebated for my purchases of that fuel oil. But we, you know, again, in some earlier versions of this language, we tried to tie in that, because right now it says a benefit, and it's a low, and the benefit is a lowering of rent, so it's cash in some way, either lowering the rent or giving cash back. But it's attributable to the amount of the payment coming in from the fuel that you can attribute to the unit, not tied to the rent payment itself. We had some earlier ones where we were trying to say, well, the amount you get in, you have to pay out the exact same amount attributable to any higher rents. But if they haven't raised the rent and have just been lowering their margins, then there hasn't been any raised rent. So I don't know if that muddies it up or answers your question.
No, it answers my question. It's a difficult situation, no doubt about it. Too many, there's a lot of circumstances. Thank you.
Other questions? I'm going to remove my objection. Any further objection to this amendment? Seeing no further objection to amendment number eight is adopted, but second, Senator Hoffman. Just for information of the committee, have your staff take a look at this amendment and the original language, and it's a tough situation. There possibly could be better language, but it's the best we could do with the time frame we had to work with. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment that I want to make, but it isn't in writing, but it's quite simple. On page 4, line 21, I move that we change $250 to $500 for the amount of the dividend.
Okay, I'll object for discussion. And your amendment includes other areas in the bill,
Right.
So the amendments to move the dividend from 250 to 500. And I'll go ahead and remove my objection. Any objection to the amendment? Hearing none. Conceptual amendments adopted. We'll move the cash dividend portion to $500. And we'll have be at ease. Come back on the record. We have amendment number 11. Is that the order? 11 sounds like a good number. Page 7, if everybody can turn to page 7. Line 6 and 7. Would delete on its billing statement, which is the end of line 6. To the beginning of line 7, and insert in a manner prescribed by AEA, and I'll go ahead and object for discussion. And Sarah Fisher Gold, is she still in here? There she is. You could help us with the amendment a little bit, and that was a good review, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sarah Fisher Gold with the Alaska Energy Authority. If I recall, it is to provide some flexibility to the Alaska Energy Authority to work with the distributors or the residential customers to prescribe how we would have the indication that it's a residential property that we've received the billing statement. This, I believe, gives us a flexibility and the distributors some flexibility in order to implement this. We don't have any objections at all.
Okay, thank you. No, go ahead. Is there any other comments on that? I'll go ahead and remove. Oh, wait a second. Senator L.
I hate to be technical, Mr. Chair, but okay. Perhaps the amendment, I mean, we're saying AEA. In the definitions, it provides that authority means the Alaska Energy Authority. So perhaps we should say authority rather than AEA. And I'm kind of looking at Sarah to... I mean, just to be consistent.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I think that would provide the consistency. I think authority is defined in the bill.
So just an amendment to the amendment that we substitute authority for AEA.
Okay, we'll take that as a friendly amendment. Any other comments on the amendment? Senator Dyson.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me for having to take a call. What did we do with Amendment 8?
Well, let's take care of this amendment, and then we'll go back that fast.
Okay. And we're on at 11 now?
We're on 11.
Thank you.
And I go ahead and remove my objection to Amendment number 11. Any further objection to Amendment number 11? Seeing none, Amendment number 11 is adopted. We're back to the main bill. Any comments on the main subject matter? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 406 Finance as amended, with permission for legislative legal to make any non-substantive conforming changes from committee with individual recommendations.
We have a motion to move the bill. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection.
It can have brief eddies.
Just a second, we'll have brief eddies. On the record. Okay, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee with individual recommendations, and that concludes the work of the committee today. The floor session is going to start, I think, immediately is the plan. Tomorrow morning, just a second, let's have a brief eddies here. On the record, we're going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting today. I'd like to thank everybody for their effort and their hard work on this bill. I know it's been a tight time frame as we try to address the emergency needs of the state of Alaska through this winter, but we're not quite done yet. Senator Hoffman.
Well, there's the potential of having one additional amendment, but that issue will be discussed probably tomorrow.
Correct.
Right. Thank you.
We'll take an address. Okay, we're back on record. We're going to clean the record up just to make crystal clear. We're moving the bill from committee with individual recommendation. Thought I said that, but it's fine. Okay, well, it's good and it's gone now. Hopefully not back. Might be some more work. Hopefully the staff and the senators will be still continue to review that language. Tomorrow we will be working earlier in the morning on the floor, so we're scheduling Senate Finance 1 p.m. tomorrow. So we're adjourned till 1 p.m. tomorrow. Meeting adjourned.